You are listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. Join him as he and his guests discover how businesses thrive in California.
Well, welcome to The Pilgrim on the 405 on this sunshiny day here in Orange County. We've got a great conversation coming up this morning with Mike Gentile, who is the founder and CEO of CISOShare. And Mike's going to tell us about this company that does two things. One, they run a business. And number two, they help find jobs for people in tech. So welcome, Mike.
Thanks so much for having me, Will.
So good. Tell us a little bit about CISOShare.
Sure. So what CISOShare does is it's all about helping organizations to build out their cybersecurity program, which is really the overall teams and processes for managing cybersecurity within their business. And at CISOShare, we've been growing pretty rapidly and help a lot of organizations with professional services and managed services in doing that. One of the unique things about CISOShare, though, is that from the beginning, we've always been built out with this learning and teaching mentality into everything that we do. So it's always about creating situations where people are learning from each other and teaching to each other, both within CISOShare as well as with our clients and the communities that we work with. And so it kind of started as a little bit of an experiment, believe it or not. And we did it that way because, the whole domain of cybersecurity is just so confusing that I really found that the people that were doing best with it were always those that could learn and teach quickly. So what we tried to do was just build that into our core of the company, and it's worked. We've really been growing, and it's helped us to, we think, add really value-added services to our customers and to our clients. From that point here now, a couple years into a business, we've really started to take a lot of risks with how we're actually developing people within that learning and teaching mentality. And from that, we've started another program, which is called Cyber Forward, which is all about doing two things. One is to get people to a livable wage, and the other is to address the big cybersecurity resource shortage, which is estimated to be millions of unfilled jobs in cybersecurity, both right now and even more so in the coming years.
Well, it seems to me that cybersecurity is something that is changing every day, right?
Absolutely. It definitely, because in order to really secure something, you have to understand what it is. And right now, with how organizations are evolving, how they use technology, how they're doing business, with everything we're experiencing right now with the coronavirus and all that, it's constantly changing. And so, when people are working in the office one day and then the next day they're all working from home, the way in which you secure that changes.
Yeah.
And with technology just in general, there's been so much evolution with causing rapid change as technology has evolved so much. And security has just been front and center for that evolution.
Well, and also it seems to me that what you were doing is playing a if I say game, I'm not talking about something insignificant, but a major game with hackers, people who are in the same way learning every day about how to take advantage of a hole here, a loop here, something that they can do differently. And that changes every day, right?
Absolutely. The thing about when you try to attack, and when you're an attacker, if you're a bad guy, they're looking for that unrest, and that unsettled kind of way of doing things, because that creates an opportunity where they can kind of slip right in and take advantage of things that people maybe, haven't thought of because it's new. For example, with people working at home right now, it creates a lot of opportunities for attackers to kind of sneak in through maybe that music system you have connected to your network that's vulnerable, that's on the same, the same place as your workstation that you're doing your work. So All of these in this interconnected world, it's creating a lot more entryways for a bad guy to take advantage of, and they're definitely doing that, right?
Well, and it seems to me that what we've discovered over the past 2 weeks about Zoom, before Zoom was something people did, and when it, what did it quadruple the number of people that were using it, then all of a sudden it becomes a target.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think, it, you know, Zoom is a perfect example of a lot of other technologies out there that are just not getting as much visibility. You know, the majority of companies and organizations that we work with, they have a product or a technology or a service or something, and it's going to have vulnerabilities in it. It's not going to necessarily always scale to the degree that a Zoom did so quickly. But the other thing that happened with Zoom that created that opportunity is that the use case of how it's being used also changed before the people had an ability to secure it. So it really went from being a business product that was used for a certain types of business meetings to really a consumer product, right? That's being used by, you know, my kids are using it. Everyone's using it for school. Everyone's using it for all these different things. And those use cases created a lot of scenarios that security folks didn't have a chance yet, or Zoom have a chance yet to kind of think through.
Right. Right. And it's those new opportunities. It seemed to me, when you call it to talk about opportunities, is the opportunity to break in, and also the opportunity to in advance, proactively close loops, close holes. And mm-hmm. now, so where are, how do you, as a company, stay in touch with the cutting edge of cybersecurity?
The thing is, it really talks to that whole learning and teaching mentality, right? If I was to look at, or my team was to have been engaged by Zoom to do a security review even a month and a half ago, the recommendations we would have given them are completely different than what we would be giving them right now, and all the people, all the security community that is rising up to support and aid them in adding that security.
Yes. Well, that's what I'm asking is how are you communicating? How are you getting communicated with? Where's the database of information on the cutting edge? Because this is something that's changing dynamically every day.
Yeah, well, you constantly have to be looking and understanding, you know, and researching the scenario to kind of look through how attackers would actually come and get it. And there's not a place that you can go to that's going to give you a list of things to always check and to dial in order to be really organized. Perfect example is there's a bunch of best practice out there, right, in cybersecurity for how to do different things. It's constantly changing, and it's constantly, you know, really not in a place where it can always help in the newest situations. It's very vague. You know, it might say something like, you know, reduce the vulnerabilities on your technology, or, you know, and that's great. That's a best practice, but how do I specifically do that, right, in a scenario? And that's where it really, again, ties to having to be quick on your feet, learn quickly, and be able to react in those situations, and to understand what's, you know, what's really going on.
Well, are there groups that you're part of who are doing the same kind of thing, and you have conversations about it, or are you making this up yourself?
Yeah. So I think that there is some there are some groups that exist out there. There's also some certification bodies in cybersecurity that help people to understand how to actually do things and some of the overarching philosophies. To be honest, though, that is what I see as one of the biggest breakdowns in the cybersecurity discipline. The thing that makes you effective in cybersecurity is all about real-world work experience. Mm-hmm. And getting into real world work experience quickly. That is what allows you to understand your bearings to be able to actually add value in the discipline. The way that our industry is set up right now is that you go and you look to get one of the certifications that are out there. For example, CISSP is one of the big ones that you can get. And it's a good certification and all that. The challenge with it, though, is that getting certified and going to school and getting educated on that doesn't teach you actually how to do any job. And that was the core problem that we're experiencing, coupled with the fact that organizations who are trying to sort all this out either put on their job descriptions, hey, I need 3 years to be successful in cybersecurity. And so that is the big thing that has contributed to actually this shortage, and it's blocked out people. On top of that, many of these people that want to enter into the cybersecurity community, they come in and they then try to go to a CISSP boot camp in order to get certified, and they spend all this money to do it. And then they come out of that and they can't get a job because they don't know how to do anything.
Right.
You know, it's pretty amazing.
Thinking about something as mundane as plumbing. I mean, I'm the president of our HOA here. We got 6 units, and we can find a plumber who'll come in and do an audit on our plumbing and suggest to us the ways to strengthen it, to maybe reinforce this, to maybe replumb the whole place. But he's coming in looking at a fixed asset. And what I'm finding, what I'm hearing from you is that there is, you know, there might be a series of things that you could look for that are broken, or places that a company is vulnerable, but the whole system is changing every day. So it's not just following the book. There's something about creativity that's got to be in there, some pursuit, some passion, something that's not going to let go until it is fixed.
Absolutely. You hit the nail on the head, and it's the biggest problem in cybersecurity that we're trying to really break down, because the whole cybersecurity best practice and certification framework is based off of the finance world. We use the same thing that people do in an organization and what you would find in their finance group. The problem is it's not the same at all. In the finance world, you know, my wife is a CPA. She's the CFO of our company, right? So she's still looking at the same financials, the same rules for financials, and the same structure, balance sheets. All these things haven't changed in 30, 40, you know, 50, mm-hmm. 100 years, you know, when the AICP was started in the 1800s. So that works when you're trying to teach people, and you're looking in your example of the pipes. The pipes are pretty similar. In our world, we're looking at businesses, specifically how they do business. And many businesses are leveraging technology and new things that are coming out, and it's accelerating. In order for you to secure that, you have to constantly be in there figuring it out and learning and understanding those changes. Because again, you know, if you're securing a 1-bedroom house, that's different than securing a 20-bedroom house, right?
Right.
And so you have to learn that every time.
Well, and once you learn it, that's a piece of experience. But two things that I'm hearing that are going to affect cybersecurity. One is you've got companies who are making money by changing the way, disrupting business, which means we're doing something different. We're using technology mm-hmm. to do something different. All right, mm-hmm. so that changes, and they're always looking to push the envelope so that they can take advantage of all these great ideas they have, right? Mm-hmm. And these people are not cyber security gurus. These are people who are solving real world problems using technology to the fullest extent they can. So that's an opening there, because mm-hmm. it's, and then you have a whole group of people who make their money by attacking those very businesses. And Zoom is such a perfect example of that experience with Zoom in the past 2 weeks. I mean, you know, with the Zoom bombing, that wasn't done for some great financial advantage. It was just acting out. Nevertheless, it's the same issue about security.
Yeah. Yeah, and you see, really what you see right now is two types of attacks. You see a politicized attack which is trying to do something to create some type of larger message, right? To protest something or, you know, whatever the case may be. The other type of attack is solely for money.
Mm-hmm.
And the attacks are completely opposite of each other, right? The protest one is going to create visibility. The other attack is not, right? They want to try and go under the radar. So
right.
it's kind of an interesting situation when you really look at it. And you talk about, you know, some companies that are looking to use technology to be innovative. That's everybody. There's no companies that are, if you're not using technology, whether you're in the simplest non-technical thing, like even farming, like whatever, still you have to use, you're using technology in some way. I mean, it's amazing the clients that we work with in industries. We work in every type of industry, and there's use cases where there's security problems that you never would have thought that industry would have had.
Yeah.
You know, it's for me, it's been fantastic because, you know, I feel really blessed to be in the cybersecurity community, to be in this industry, because I've always liked to think that I'm kind of an idea guy, and constantly, you know, that is cybersecurity. You really have to be creative with how you're coming up, understanding how an attack could happen, you know, and thinking like the bad guys. There's a creativity with that. And then as much, there's a creativity associated with how you solve these problems in a big way.
Well, so thinking about this and thinking about also you're helping people to find jobs, to be trained and to learn about cybersecurity, what are the qualifications to be a great cybersecurity consultant, person, employee? Tell me a little bit about what you are looking for in a person.
Yeah, for us, so what we're looking for and what the community was looking for, you know, in the discipline, I think are two different things. And that's really why, you know, a lot of what we're trying to do with Cyber 4, what we're looking for is people that can learn and teach quickly and have strong aptitudes to deal with everything that we've talked about on the beginning of this call, like rapidly changing situations, a lot of egos, you know, and energy because people don't understand, people are scared. You know, how do you manage in that situation and understand the requirements of what's going on in a specific situation, and then work with people in small groups and communicate with them to come up with solutions and then execute on those solutions, actually implementing those fixes in a fast changing world. So that's what we look for. And a lot of it is based on our learning and teaching culture. Most organizations are doing is they're trying to use the legacy approach to finding talent, which is 3 years in the business, have a master's degree in cybersecurity and all of these different things. And they're not finding those people because they just don't exist.
Well then, all right. So would it be safe to say that what you are doing is you are the legacy yourself? CISO Share is the legacy. You've been in business for more than 3 years.
Yeah.
And you are the legacy. Now, when somebody goes through your training, do they graduate and then never talk to you again? Or are they part of an ongoing relationship?
Got it. So in 2019, we started a program that we call Cyber Forward. And what Cyber Forward is all about is it was designed to identify and connect people that have these aptitudes that I talked about, and then bridge them into working roles in cybersecurity in those positions that historically are going unfilled because there's no one that's meeting those requirements. Mm-hmm. And so we did that as a beta. The first time we did it was with, we partnered with Orange County United Way, and they gave us a chance. And it's a 5-phase program that starts in the beginning with identifying people that have aptitudes to be successful in cyber. Those are people that are, you know, they can learn and teach quickly. They're good. You know, maybe they're veterans. Maybe they're a mother that's really good at explaining things to her child. Maybe, you know, it's all different types of people, all different types of ages that are successful. So we identify them. And then the other thing that we do is a lot of times people that are often have roadblocks that hinder them from entering the discipline. We work with them on identifying those and trying to move those out of the way so that they can focus on the development phases of the program. And roadblocks are things, they may be housing insecure. Maybe they don't have access to transportation. A big one is they don't have access to the internet. You know, getting internet access is like a car payment these days, right?
Yeah,
it's hard. You know, they may not have employment in order to make money to pay for a certain type of training or whatever. They might not have healthcare or daycare, a whole myriad of problems. So we work with them on those, identify them, and try and find solutions to help enable them to then move to phase two, which is a 4-week training class that we do. In that 4-week training class, that's where it's all about just teaching them about what cybersecurity is and going over what we did. Again, you know, it's not just a hacker in a hoodie, you know, that needs to be super technical. It's someone that can be creative and has really good communication skills and can really understand. They might have technical background too, but it's not required, and they can get in there. We put them in that course. We get them through for 4 weeks. They're force ranked. And the ones that do best then move on to an intern with us. And at that point, we're giving them hands-on types of things to do. It's not an intern where you come and mow the lawn. It's where you get in and you're really starting to work in certain roles in cybersecurity. That's really the source and initial development part of the program. Then we work with organizations and partners that are willing to give these people 3 to 6 month projects to actually get in there and start doing work in this model. And from there, they move through that. If they make it through that first successful phase, then they move to phase five, which is really looking for full-time work in cybersecurity. So what we're trying to really do is manage the entire life cycle, both the demand side, we call it, organizations that need people, and the development cycle. And then these people are supported all along the way and are still in the ecosystem.
Now you're talking about the United Way in Orange County, right?
Yeah, they're one of our partners. We have about coming up on 20 partners, I believe, now that are sourcing.
Is this a regional effort or is this a national effort?
So right now we are partnering with the Orange County United Way. They're one of our sourcing partners. We're also talking with other United Ways in their chapter system. Mm-hmm. What we try to do is get hiring organizations that are located in the communities of the sourcing partners that we have. Mm-hmm. So we've really got Orange County starting to develop now. And we are looking for other regions to bring on. We were actually looking at piloting in Boston and some other places. Mm-hmm. Okay. right as all the the pandemic stuff happened. So, but we are continuing to grow out, and we are actually right now sourcing for our first virtual class, which is
What I was going to ask. Are the classes virtual, or they have to be in San Clemente?
Yeah. So originally we were doing them in person, and the reason is because we wanted part of the training is all about nonverbal cues and many of the things that actually happen when you're actually live with somebody. We were trying to do everything in person and also develop it in the communities where there were hiring partners. Naturally, now everything's moved to this virtual format. So we are doing a completely virtual program, and we are again doing Orange County in May when we start our next cycle. If anyone's interested or knows someone that might be interested, have them reach out and we can get them into the class. It's filling up pretty quick. But we're also opening it up in a virtual format this time to anywhere outside of Orange County to really test that model.
Oh, if I have somebody that I thought would be a good candidate for you, just get him over. This is a fellow who happens to live in Western Massachusetts.
Absolutely. Oh, that'd be great. Yeah, absolutely. You know, the thing that's been really crazy about this is, you know, we've learned a ton along the way because we are a very different program. Many of the people that we get are not directly coming to us themselves. it's the husband of somebody that heard about it, the wife of mm-hmm. someone that heard about it, the sister, the cousin, the uncle, you know, a buddy, a roommate we've had.
A grandson.
I mean, it's been amazing. And, yeah. Oh, you know what? They're kind of interested about cyber. They want to check it out or they're not working right now. They need, you know, something. So if you know someone, we've had some of our best successes that way.
Well, and thinking about my brother didn't go to college. In fact, he went to a technical school in Texas, and after the second semester, he was teaching the class. And he wound up writing code for, you know, a basic, not basic computer code, but writing the operational system code for compact computers. And then he went from there as, you know, moved around. I mean, no technical training through Absolutely. College. It was just, this is what I know how to do. And
yeah,
he's very successful right now. I was with him a month ago, and I mean, it's just amazing the kind of things that people can do without going through the traditional, you were talking about the traditional certification, and without going through college or those kinds of opportunities, but just to get in there and learn how.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I don't want to take anything away from the great certification programs in cyber and the people that developed them. They're magnificent. It's just the front end development of people, I think, needs to be in more of this type of approach. And then you add the more specific technical certification based training a little later on. We've seen, and the only requirements we do have is in our program is you need to be 18 right now. We are working with younger high school folks, but in a little bit of a different program. And you need to have at least your GED or high school education. What we found is most people have more advanced education and things like that as well, but GED is all that's required. And we've seen no correlation between having any type of degree and being successful in the program.
Well, all right. So you mentioned one thing that you were doing that you thought was important to have face-to-face training because you pick up visual cues. Now, one of the things I'm observing is that as we move from, I was estimating that maybe 50 or 60% of the people were familiar with, comfortable with Zoom before this latest circumstance. But I think, you know, within a week or two, maybe a month, 85 to 90% of people are going to be able to use Zoom as if it were just an augmented telephone call.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
And so there are going to be things that change dramatically. Now, I'm wondering if this is the opportunity to learn how to do many of those things that we thought were limited to face-to-face. I mean, how do we begin to pick up on visual cues in a Zoom meeting? How do do those kinds of things?
I think one thing is with some of the business rules of sessions. I know for us at CISOshare, one of the things that we just started rolling out is that when you're on the meeting, you need to actually be showing your video. Mm-hmm. That's one thing. I think with that, you're able to get the same level of engagement, you know, that you can in the non-virtual kind of format. Maybe it's not 100%, but I think it's pretty close. I think one of the other things too is it needs to be live, so you can't just give training out to someone. And you know, I'm not a huge proponent of the training where you can do it at your own pace. I know there's a time for that, but you're not going to be able to tell cues or understand mm-hmm. the moments or any of those types of things. And then the final thing that we're doing is we're trying to limit the amount of people that can actually take it. I mean, we had a ton of people that were interested in taking this upcoming virtual format, and we're trying to open it up and get as many people as we can, but we're also trying to do it in a way in which we can not have 10,000 people on there.
Work. My wife has been doing online education for about 12 years, and she's now putting together some online education for theological education. And there's no question that you can access things that have been pre-recorded, but that's not teaching. That's information gathering. But real teaching means that you have developed relationships with people, and that's going to be outside of a Zoom call. You know, there's Slack, there's email, there's a variety of ways, but you're building relationships all along. But what I'm thinking is we're learning how to build these relationships via technology. And it's no longer, that's just totally different. No, this is our learning how to do this.
Yeah, I think so. And I think the ramifications to that are going to be real interesting. You know, you're seeing right now that the old brick and mortar schools are trying to figure this all out.
Yeah. And my local networks, I mean, I have a couple of choirs that I'm involved with, but we can't get together now. But we are getting together. It was a little while before people would actually get together. But now every week we're getting together on Zoom and we're doing some interesting things that we'd never done before. National networks that I'm part of, I mean, I've been on Zoom meetings that had 200 or 300 people on it. Then that morphed into Slack, and we're learning how to communicate important things. And what I'm discovering is we are building relationships with people that we would never before had that level of access to. Mm-hmm. And it's just amazing to me. Now, what do you see that 12 to 18 months from now, what changes will there be? What will endure? What will we have learned? What kinds of things do you see that will be different 12 to 18 months from now than 2 months ago?
Well, I think really the way in which people engage, I think on the business side, business services are going to be very, very different. It used to be like when we would do a consulting engagement, or we would go out, you know, we would fly, we'd have a lot of travel. People would go out there for the beginning of the meeting and then do the rest later, and then come back for a board presentation or whatever and present there. Now, it's all being done virtual. But I don't see that really changing back. I think it's going to continue to be in that virtualized format, which means it's going to open up the ability for us in terms of who we staff and who we work with, and the pools of people that we are engaging with. I think we're going to have a lot more access to those people. So it's going to be, again, how do we actually make requirements so we're bringing in the best ones in order to really help us? And so I think that is going to be a big thing. The other thing I think you're going to see is a humongous shift, probably the biggest shift you could ever imagine, of people into new technical-based careers. Mm-hmm. I think that is, we're really setting up, we think, for this novel shift in Cyber4, because that's exactly what we do. Mm-hmm. You know, people that are in the gig economy, it's going to be slow goings, I think, to get that going, except for the couple of pocket disciplines that are good. You're going to have people that are looking to move into these high demand types of careers like cybersecurity, and it's going to be in a scale that I think will be unprecedented.
Well, can your people work from home?
Yeah, we always were able to work from home for the most part, other than some of the, you know, we have a facility here. We like the getting people together and having people work. But I think that'll definitely shift. Yeah, you're going to see a lot of people working from home. The other thing that's going to happen is it's always been somewhat acceptable that a dog's barking even before all this happened or something while you're on a call.
Right.
But now it's a complete new norm. Yes. Right. So all of that, even if you're in a board meeting and a dog barks or a baby cries or who knows, it's just acceptable now. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's going to change back.
Yeah.
I really don't.
Well, it's amazing. It's amazing. And it sounds to me like you guys are positioned to be right at the forefront of that. Are there any other people doing what you're doing?
There's a lot of people that are trying to develop people and educate them. There's education providers. There's also nonprofits and community partners that are helping to remove roadblocks for people. There's consultancies that are kind of like us, you know, that are trying to sell services in a way. There's few people, at least as it relates to our Cyber Forward program, that are trying to connect all of those things in a kind of networked ecosystem where everyone works together for win-wins. I think we're the first doing that. And I am sure that, I know we are not perfect, but we are trying to push because we think that this is needed, you know, mm-hmm. for all the reasons that we've talked today. So we're having a ton of fun. We're having a ton of fun making it happen.
Well, if it's not fun, why do it, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Well, and I think that's part of what I hear, the kind of the message that I'm hearing from you is you're looking for people who are going to have fun working in technology, building a base of experience, and then getting on the front lines of creativity to investigate, discover, and then solve cybersecurity problems. And that's fun.
Yeah. Well, I think the big thing is that we're telling people that is what cybersecurity is. Mm-hmm. Whereas what they think it is beforehand, a lot of times they think it's that guy in the hoodie that's, you know, just super hyper technical.
Right.
And so all we're really trying to do is shine the light on, hey, if this is your personality type, this maybe isn't what you maybe think it is. Come right. Take a look. And if you want, we've tried to create a pathway to get you to a livable wage the best we can in this new thing, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's amazing too. It's amazing that when you talk about the kind of work that this is, I mean, my administrative assistant is a super, super person. She has muscular dystrophy and she came from Goodwill. And my first thought was in seeing her in this electric wheelchair with her nursing entourage with a breathing, a respirator was, oh my goodness, how is this going to work? But she has taken over my business, runs my calendar, my email. You got the email from her. She is doing super work. And she is in her office from time to time, but a lot of her work is being done from home. But I never know the difference because it's all virtual. And and she has a job. She went to 98 different job interviews and got no offers at all. And now she is just doing a wonderful piece of work. And I think you're going to find the same thing is true. You've got to be finding that there are a lot of people out there who, for lots of reasons, don't believe they can find a job, especially in something as esoteric as technology and cybersecurity. But you are offering them not a hand out, but a hand in to a world that can be wherein they can be very productive with your support.
Yeah, it's all about how you're identifying talent and mapping it up to what's truly needed and then how you create the pathway. Mm-hmm. And in our world, we have, I don't think, been creative with that.
Yes.
And we've been too formulaic and we're trying to break that down. And again, we're not perfect, but we're trying to break it down in order to enable those people and work with community partners that are experts with maybe certain types of people that might be experiencing certain types of things. So, you know, veteran groups or maybe domestic violence groups or, you know, a ton of different types of groups. So if you identify them and then you just create what is the bridge to get their magic into the pathway, then it seems to be working.
There was a cartoon, it must have been 10 years ago, a cartoon in the New Yorker magazine, which was two dogs, one looking over the shoulder of the other, and the other in front of a computer with his paws on the keyboard, turning and saying, well, you know, when you're on the internet, nobody knows you're a dog.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's part of it, is that the whole identity can get shifted when we let go of all the limitations that people have given us, told us about, that we have fallen into believing, and to move from that into, wait a minute, all these things are possible.
Yeah, it's also all those stereotypes on the other side too. Right? If you can break them, if you can break them down, create a situation where they can actually see what a person can really do.
This is wonderful. I really enjoyed being with you today. What would you like from people? First of all, how could people nominate folks for your program?
So we're really looking for two big things. We're looking for people that are interested or know people that are interested to come to the class. So if you reach out to us, if you come to CISO Share, there's a link for Cyber Forward, our program, and it tells you how to reach out and learn about potentially coming up in our program. Coming up in our upcoming cycle, which is starting May 8th. So for sure, reach out because that is filling up pretty quick. The other types of groups that we need are hiring partners that are willing to come in, participate in the program, and engage people in those 4-month projects in the format that we have. The more of those that we can get, the more people that we're able to develop, even though right now we're developing as many as we can. And it's not that you're just doing it for the sake of developing the person. These people will help you with your security program, and they will actually add more value in performing the work than one, not having anyone at all. But also, we like to think it's in a mechanism that provides enablement of a lot of work to get done. It's pretty unbelievable.
That's wonderful. I really appreciate what you're doing. Have you ever heard of the Entrepreneurial Operating System? EOS. Well, I'm going to send you a book. It's called, let me ask you a question. Are you more of a textbook kind of guy or more of a storybook kind of guy?
I'm more of a textbook kind of guy.
All right. So I'm going to send you a book called Traction. Jen will send it out and then give you a chance to read it. And then we'll sit down and talk about that and see what it's about. Well, this has been wonderful. And people can get you at CISOshare.com.
Yep. CISOshare.com.
And if they want to talk to you directly, you want to give them a telephone number, an email or something?
You know what? If you come to CISO Share, you can connect. I'm also Mike Gentile on LinkedIn at CISO Share. Out there and you can always find me.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Mike, for being with us. And this has been a tremendous example of how businesses, as well as people who thought they were behind the eight ball, can thrive in California.
Thanks so much for having me, Will. It's been a great time.
Great.
You've been listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. To hear more of the programs in this podcast, go to www.willcrist.com.